Welcome to this deep dive, where we sift through the complexities of the legal world to bring you the knowledge you need efficiently. Today, we're diving into a case that, well, it's about pepperoni, but it holds some really crucial lessons for you as future legal professionals. Liguria Foods, Inc., V. Griffith Laboratories, Inc.
That's right. It's Liguria, the pepperoni maker, versus Griffith, who supplied their spice mix. Liguria's claim that Griffith's seasoning caused their product to spoil way too early, and the damages alleged were significant tens of millions of dollars.
Wow. So definitely more than just a little spice disagreement.
Absolutely. And it really digs into some fundamental stuff, commercial law, legal procedure.
Exactly. And what we want to pull out for you today are the key insights around implied warranties, those unspoken promises in a sale, and also the discovery process, which can get pretty contentious.
Yeah, think of it as practical takeaways for when you're out there.
Okay, let's unpack this. Starting with implied warranties. When Liguria bought this Pep Spice, what assurances were automatically included?
Right. So even without a specific written guarantee, the Uniform Commercial Code, the UCC, which governs these kinds of sales, puts certain warranties in place automatically. The big one here first is the implied warranty of merchantability. That's UCC Section 2314.
Merchantability. Okay, what does that mean practically, for the spice mix?
It means the goods have to be, reasonably fit for their ordinary purpose. In this case, Liguria argued Griffith's spice mix just didn't meet that basic standard. You know, a spice mix for preserving pepperoni should actually help preserve pepperoni.
Right. Seems obvious. It should do the main thing it's supposed to do.
Liguria's point was it failed that fundamental job.
Okay. But there was another one too, right? The implied warranty of fitness for a particular purpose. UCC 2315. How's that different?
Yeah, that one's more specific. It applies when the seller, so Griffith here, knows the particular reason the buyer, Liguria, needs the product. And importantly, the buyer is relying on the seller's skill or judgment to provide something suitable.
And Liguria had a specific need.
They did. They told Griffith they needed the pepperoni to last 270 days on the shelf. That was their particular purpose. Liguria argued Griffith knew this, provided the spice for that purpose, and the spice failed to meet that specific requirement.
Okay, so it wasn't just make pepperoni taste good, it was make pepperoni last 270 days.
Yeah.
That's a key distinction. What did Liguria think was actually wrong with the spice?
Their theory was basically twofold. Either the spice wasn't mixed properly, so the preservative stuff, the antioxidants, weren't evenly distributed, or there just wasn't enough antioxidant in the mix overall.
Like you could have pockets without enough protection.
Exactly. Uneven mixing. That was a big part of their argument.
That makes sense. But Griffith obviously didn't just roll over. What was their counterargument?
Oh, definitely not. Griffith pointed the finger back at Liguria. They suggested maybe the problem was Liguria's meat quality or, something in Liguria's own production process. Classic defense, look for other potential causes.
Right. Shift the blame. This is where the evidence really matters, isn't it? You mentioned expert testimony was important.
Hugely important. Liguria brought in a food scientist, Dr. David Dickey. He provided that specific mechanism we talked about, the idea that even if the total amount of antioxidant was okay, poor mixing could create these hot spots with too little protection, leading to spoilage.
So he gave a scientific basis for Liguria's claim about the spice itself being the problem.
Precisely. It adds a lot of weight when you have an expert explaining how the product could have failed.
What other evidence supported Liguria? They couldn't just rely on the expert, could they?
No, and they had something else quite compelling, their history. Liguria showed they'd been using the same meat suppliers for ages without these spoilage issues. The problems only started after they switched to Griffith's Pep Spice.
So the only variable that changed was the spice mix.
That was their argument. It really weakened Griffith's claim that it must be the meat or Liguria's process. That consistency before the switch was powerful evidence.
Okay, so Liguria builds this case. Griffith asks the judge to just throw out the motion for summary judgment. What did the court do?
The court said no, denied summary judgment. The key reason: there were genuine disputes of material fact. Basically, enough conflicting evidence and disagreement on crucial points, especially about what caused the spoilage.
Meaning it wasn't clear-cut enough for a judge to decide?
Exactly. Between Dr. Dickey's opinion, Liguria's history with their meat, and the timing, there was enough there that the judge felt a jury needed to hear it all and decide who was right.
Okay, that really clarifies the warranty issues and the role of evidence.
Yeah.
Now, let's pivot a bit to the discovery procedure side of things. The materials mentioned boilerplate objections being a problem. What are those exactly?
So, discovery is when each side gets information from the other documents, answers to questions. Boilerplate objections are those, like, generic cut-and-paste objections lawyers sometimes use. Things like, objection, this request is overly broad and unduly burdensome, or seeks irrelevant information.
Without really explaining why it's broad or burdensome in this specific case.
Exactly. They lack specificity. They don't connect the objection to the actual request or the facts of the lawsuit. It's just boilerplate language.
Sounds lazy, or maybe like trying to hide the ball. And Judge Bennett, in this case, was not happy about it?
Not happy is putting it mildly. He strongly disapproved of both sides using these. He basically said it violates the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. The rulebook for federal courts specifically rules 26, 33, and 34, which demands specificity.
And he threatened consequences, right? Substantial sanctions.
Yes. He issued a clear warning. He said, going forward, lawyers and clients using these kinds of lazy, nonspecific objections could face real penalties, things like having to pay the other side's legal fees, being forced to provide the info anyway, or worse.
A serious shot across the bow. But interestingly, he didn't actually impose sanctions in this specific case, even though both sides did it. Why not?
That's a key point. Despite his clear frustration, he held back on sanctions this time. He noted that while the lawyers had actually cooperated reasonably well overall, they resolved most disputes themselves without running to the court constantly, and crucially, they promised to clean up their act.
So a warning, not a punishment, because their overall behavior wasn't totally obstructionist.
Seems like it. He viewed it more as a part of a widespread bad habit in the legal profession. He called it a toxic culture of lazy objections. Strong words.
Definitely a wake-up call for anyone entering the profession. There was also something about spoliation against Griffith.
Right. Spoliation means losing or destroying evidence relevant to a case. Liguria accused Griffith of failing to keep proper manufacturing records for the specific batches of Peck spice involved. Those records could have been really important.
And destroying evidence intentionally is a big no-no, legally speaking.
A huge no-no. If a court finds intentional spoliation, it can lead to serious consequences, like an adverse inference instruction. That's where the judge tells the jury they can assume the lost evidence would have hurt the party that destroyed it.
Ouch. That could sink a case. Did that happen here?
It seems Liguria raised the issue, but the ruling we're discussing didn't make a final finding of intentional spoliation. Still, it highlights just how critical it is to preserve everything once you even think litigation might happen.
Okay, we've covered a lot: implied warranties, extra evidence, discovery rules, boilerplate objections, spoliation. What are the absolute must-remember takeaways for law students listening?
Okay, first, discovery objections must be specific. No more vague copy-paste stuff. Explain why the request is objectionable in this case. It's required by the rules. Second, implied warranties really hinge on communication. What did the seller know about the buyer's needs? And performance, did the product actually do the job? Liguria illustrates that perfectly.
And the power of that expert testimony seems crucial.
Absolutely. A solid expert can create that genuine factual dispute needed to survive summary judgment. And finally, Judge Bennett's message is loud and clear. Courts are losing patience with discovery games. Professionalism, cooperation, following the rules, it's not optional.
It's interesting he even tied the boilerplate issue back to a 1980 rule amendment. Suggests this isn't a brand new problem.
Right. It gives context. It shows this is something courts have been wrestling with, and maybe the pendulum is swinging towards stricter enforcement now.
So bringing it all home, this pepperoni case, Liguria Foods v. Griffith Laboratories, really shows how substantive law, like warranties, and procedural law, like discovery rules, are totally intertwined. A simple sale can spiral into complex litigation involving science, evidence battles, and the very rules of the legal game.
It really does. And maybe the final thought for listeners is this. Consider that balance. You need to be a zealous advocate for your client, absolutely. But you also have to operate within the rules, professionally and ethically. Judge Bennett's point resonates. The rules aren't suggestions. They're the law. Understanding them, respecting them, that's fundamental to being a good lawyer.